morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink. And our guest today is the senior legal counsel.
Staff attorney
for Lambda Legal. I knew I didn't have that right. Staff attorney for, you know, last week we were talking to Rebecca Covell. She was telling us all the thousands of dollars of legal papers that we need to solidify our relationships. Ken is here to ruin her business.
Well, let's just say, I think it's fair to say that Ken might ruin it, right? But that Rebecca could only go so far.
That's true.
There are things Rebecca cannot do to help LGBT couples.
So, Ken, why do you hate Rebecca?
I don't hate her. I give her name out freely to people. So,
Ken is with Lambda Legal. Lambda Legal is the national organization that defends an awful lot of cases or prosecutes an awful lot of cases that are of lots of value to the LGBT and rest of the community. Most famous case that came out of Texas, Lawrence v. Texas, celebrating its 10th anniversary, and that was a Lambda Legal case, of course. There are two cases that are coming up before the Supreme Court this spring, the Proposition 8 case and the Edie Windsor. Thank you, Edie Windsor case, which is a DOMA case. Let's just talk about Prop 8 first.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about this case, how it even got to the Supreme Court.
This is a case that's gotten a lot of attention. The name of the case is Hollingsworth versus Perry, and it's a case that was filed right after the election in 2008 when the state of California passed what has been called Proposition 8. Earlier in the year, in May of 2008, the California Supreme Court had decided that it violated California's constitution to exclude gay people from the institution of marriage. And so people started getting married in California in 2008. And during this window, about 18,000 couples got married in California. The proponents of this initiative put a ballot to the people for a vote that would amend their constitution and basically create an exception to the Equal Protection Clause. Everyone gets equal protection except gay people in the context of marriage. Mm-hmm. And so it really was a spectacular thing to do. It's almost similar to years ago when the state of Colorado tried to pass a law that said that gay people couldn't seek any protection from the government from discrimination as a matter of Colorado's constitution. And, of course, the Supreme Court had struck that down in a case called Romer versus Evans. So this is similar to that in that the voters of California, by a narrow margin.
By very narrow.
A very narrow margin.
Today, I think it would be different.
Well, the polling results that we've seen most recently say that more than 50% in California.
The poll this week said 61% would vote for, 32% said they'd be against, and the rest were undecided, which means they probably wouldn't vote.
And what else is so different about this case, of course, all of the initiatives around the country that have put the marriage vote on the ballot, they've won and won easily. But what really is different about the California case is people have started already getting married, as you said. So they had the right, and then they took it away.
Well, in the states that have passed constitutional amendments, Texas included, these are constitutional amendments that many times passed by a wide margin, but no one was getting married. So it really was an academic question, because in none of these states could you get married anyway. California was different for that reason. There's been a lot of interest about, so how do you get rid of Proposition 8? Well, immediately after it went into effect in November of 2008, two very famous lawyers who are not a part of the gay rights movement, David Boies and Ted Olson, and you may remember them if you followed the Bush versus Gore debacle back when the Florida election couldn't be called and the Supreme Court stepped in and resolved it.
In the 2000 election.
That's right, in the 2000 election. And that was David Boies arguing for Al Gore and Ted Olson arguing for George W. Bush. And so they already were famous. They already were well known to be on opposite ideologies of each other. David Boies is a very famous trial lawyer. He sued Microsoft for antitrust violations. He's had some very, very big cases. Ted Olson is a very conservative lawyer who is known as, when he was Solicitor General, we worked on Ronald Reagan's cabinet, and he also was Solicitor General during the Bush years. And so,
his wife was killed on 9/11 when the plane hitting the Pentagon struck. She was on that plane.
That's right.
And they spoke beforehand.
That's right.
A very interesting bit of sad trivia.
So they definitely are on the opposite ends of the spectrum, and they are very well known. And so they, together with the backing of a group in California called American Foundation for Equal Rights,
yes.
I think it's for AFER, they decided to challenge the Proposition 8 case, or the enactment of Proposition 8. And to be quite candid, that was at a time when not too many people thought the Supreme Court would be willing to give a favorable ear to that challenge, although they both had lots of experience in the Supreme Court, and they knew the court well. And so I will be candid to say that many people who do a lot of gay rights work, the people who have been doing it for years, were very nervous about this case. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a matter of whether they were right. Everybody thought they were right. It was a matter of whether the court would agree that they're right. And we know from experience that you don't get to the Supreme Court very often. And when you do get there, a loss can set you back for a long time. Bowers versus Hardwick was a tremendous loss, and it was, it was a long time before we got back up in Lawrence versus Texas to undo the damage. So
one of the good things also is you don't get to the Supreme Court very fast. So the difference between 2008 and 2012 is a vast difference. 2013, yes, is a vast change.
It's not just a vast change for the court. It's a vast change for the country.
The country is what I'm saying.
I know we're going to talk some more about other things around the country on marriage too, but. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody could have predicted where we are today.
And I think California has such a unique history on this issue because, there was the Prop 22 years ago that basically was just like a law, not a constitutional amendment, kind of banning us. And then their legislature, the people's representatives in their legislature, twice passed marriage equality, and twice a California governor, i.e. Arnold, vetoed it. Didn't sign it. And so the people have spoken in lots of different ways. Their Supreme Court has spoken, their legislature has spoken, the people at the ballot box has spoken, and I think the majority of those outcomes is really with us.
It is. It's kind of interesting because, the state of New Jersey passed marriage, too, and it got vetoed by the governor there,
yes.
Although they still have until 2014 to override the veto. So there is a movement there to try to do that. But you're right. We're seeing progress on the state level faster than anybody ever could have predicted. And now we have 9 states in the District of Columbia, and there's a horse race for who's going to be the 10th state, and I know you all have some kind of internal bet going on here.
Right, I say Illinois, and
I said Rhode Island.
And it looks like I started pretty good, then it kind of died. Rhode Island looked like they were going to take it over,
and it looks like
dying there, too.
Yeah. Well, there's also a bill in Hawaii. What I hear is it may not get passed till next year, but it'll probably get passed. And then, we're still looking at Delaware as a possibility in the next year. Maybe
Colorado's been rumbling for civil
Minnesota.
And Colorado is probably going to happen. It's now passed one house, and it's ready to pass the other one.
Marriage, or is that a civil union? That's civil union.
And that brings us to some interesting things that could come out of the Supreme Court. So we'll go back to the Prop 8 case. So this is a case that was filed in California. Two very famous, not gay rights lawyers, but two very famous lawyers who brought a conversation to society that got people's ears that normally wouldn't listen to people like me and you. And it was amazing the publicity and the people who started coming around and taking the issue seriously about why it makes any sense to exclude gay people from getting married and who really gets hurt when you do that. They put on a trial. A lot of the cases in marriage cases in the past didn't involve full trials. In fact, the only the closest we got was in Iowa, and that didn't involve a full trial, although we had witnesses ready to testify. So they called witnesses, and they put on a completely robust record of harm to gay people to be excluded from marriage, and got a great ruling from the trial judge, Von Walker, who's now retired from the bench, and then it went up to the Ninth Circuit, and they got a great decision out of the Ninth Circuit. So so now it's teed up for the Supreme Court. And
I think it's really interesting at the trial level that the state of California did not step in to defend this law, this amendment to their constitution, and they had to kludge together a group of folks who would defend it.
That's right. And that's another thing that we're seeing. This is the case in Illinois, too. There's a lawsuit pending in Illinois for marriage, and the state intervened on the side of the gay couples who are choosing to get married. And the attorney for the county, Cook County, also declined to defend it. And so they had to let some clerks from downstate come in.
So when the Supreme Court came in and decided to take the case, they issued some memorandums, basically some rulings that said, we want to hear about certain things in the case. One of them was standing.
That's right.
What was the other one?
And the other was the broad question of whether denying same-sex couples the right to get married is a violation of the 14th Amendment.
Okay. So with this whole thing of standing coming in, how does that affect the way they're even going to hear the case?
Well, there are in order to be in federal court, you have to have what is called standing. You have to have an actual case in controversy. You have to have a stake in the outcome. And it has to be more than just a general stake that the public has in laws generally. In other words, you can have a strong opinion about a law about taxes, but if you're not subject to the tax, your opinion really doesn't give you a right to challenge it. In this particular case, the person who would be expected to defend these laws would be the state, because the state is the attorney general usually is obligated under the state's constitution to defend the laws.
And the states and the counties are the ones that issue the marriage licenses.
That's right. And so in this case, that was not the case. The state did not defend the law. In fact, the state said that they agreed that the law was that Proposition 8 was unconstitutional. And so what the court did is they allowed a group of people who were the ballot proponents. They're the ones that put together this Proposition 8 and sent it out for the circulated signatures, put it on the ballot, and promoted it and got it passed. And the state of California said, okay, you can come in and defend this in place of the state, because the state's not defending it, and we want it to have a full trial, and to do that we need somebody to present both sides. Which is fine at the trial level, but then the question became, did they have the right to appeal it? Because the state did not appeal the decision. They lost at the trial. Judge Walker said Prop 8 was unconstitutional, and he struck it down. And so the state said, fine with us. We're good. The ballot proponents said, well, we'll appeal it. And they did. And the Ninth Circuit questioned whether they had the right to do that, and they asked the California Supreme Court, well, under state law, would you let ballot proponents defend their initiative? And the state court said, yes, as a matter of state law, we would. That's okay. The problem is that standing is a federal issue. So now the Supreme Court has to decide, okay, well, maybe California would let you do that in California court, but does that satisfy federal law that you have the type of injury that makes it a concrete dispute? And that's going to be a question. And so no one had argued that.
It seems odd that this is coming up in this case, only because have there been other cases where standing has been an issue, or has it been normal for states to defend their own laws?
Actually, it just happened this week in the Supreme Court with a challenge to the wiretap laws. And the ACLU had brought, and some other groups had brought, a challenge to people who were being monitored and surveyed by the CIA purportedly, but they couldn't prove that their emails and phone calls had actually been, they just knew it was going on and they thought they would be subject to it, and this court said you don't have any proof that you've been injured, so there's no standing, and they dismiss the case. So the Supreme Court does. Oh yes,
does dismiss off of standing. Okay,
and they can raise it at any time, even if it wasn't raised along the way. And so the Supreme Court has actually appointed there's a court appointed. It's called an amica attorney, and they pick someone who has expertise on this. In this case, they selected Harvard Law Professor Vicki Jackson, and she will argue that there is no standing. So she's her whole purpose is to convince the court that they should just dismiss the case.
So will there be a hearing first on standing, and then if they decide standing, or
the Donald Verrilli has filed on behalf of the Department of Justice, they're arguing or they're discussing with the court what they would like to have for a schedule for the arguments. Mm-hmm. They've asked the court to expand the arguments in both the cases and to specifically allot time for each side that's involved. They probably will take up the standing issue separately, mm-hmm. and each case is set for its own morning. On Tuesday, March 26th, is the Proposition 8 hearing.
It's my birthday.
And hopefully they'll give you a good birthday present.
Yeah. I hope that's good luck.
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
On Wednesday, the next day, they'll handle the Windsor versus Department of Justice case. And that is the one for the challenge to the Federal Defense of Marriage Act.
Which we'll talk about in just a minute. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Our guest is from Lambda Legal, Ken Upton. And, I was going to say is staff attorney, senior staff attorney. Okay, that was the part I was trying to get at the beginning. Senior Staff Attorney Ken Upton. Take it away, Annie.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now is the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON's P.O. Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. That's KNON Box 710909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure you put the name of the show you are supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON Pledge Drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
This is Sonny Boy Mark, and I'd like to take a minute here to tell you about over 60 minutes of great blues listening available now on KNON's Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. This is some great stuff, folks. 15 tracks from the Two Tones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, Johnny Red and the Roosters, the Chris Watson Band, the Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone with Charlie Love, David Millsap, Sir Loin and the Ass Kicking Machine, Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, and JJ and the Detonators. The 1,000 copies we made are selling fast, and we won't reissue it. Get yours now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records and Rewind Music. The CD is available as a download at cdbaby.com. All proceeds benefit KNON, sponsored by Forever Young Records. Vinyl copies available at Forever Young Records only. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit KNON.org. Your ears been bending for some blues? Well, feed them the real thing with Texas Blues Radio Volume 5.
This is William, your videographer for the KNON talk shows. You can watch Lambda Weekly by going to the KNON.org website. Click on schedules to the left side of your screen, choose Lambda Weekly's page, scroll to the bottom of that page, then choose your favorite show to watch or download. This show will be ready for viewing by lunchtime Tuesday. Have a great day.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Lambda Legal Senior Staff Attorney Ken Upton. I did it.
You did
it. Only
it
took four tries.
Nice.
And you still have more chances.
I do. I do have more chances. We're talking about two cases that are going to be coming up before the Supreme Court. One question I had was Ted Olson, who's going to be defending the Prop 8 case, not defending, prosecuting prosecuting? He's
arguing.
Defending.
Arguing.
He's going to be defending the court's ruling that struck down
Prop 8. He was Solicitor General for a number of years under Bush. So he's pled a number of cases before the Supreme Court before. And he's conservative, so he knows Scalia. He knows Roberts. Well, actually, probably not Roberts so much, but
Thomas.
And how will that affect the rulings on that side? Does it affect that, our guy here is on the opposite side of what we'd normally be thinking? Do you think that could affect the decision?
One of the things that Ted Olson brought to the table was a very strong, and he said this in interviews, a very strong position that it is a conservative viewpoint that these types of laws shouldn't exist, that the law should, a conservative view of the law should favor striking down Prop 8. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that he brought us was a conservative voice that said that. It's something we've lacked for a long time. And you're starting to see a number, in fact, in one of the cases, a number of Republicans, in the DOMA case, a number of Republicans filed a brief basically saying that it should be struck down because it's a conservative thing to do. And so
it's about less government and personal freedom.
It's about more personal freedom. It's about states' rights versus the federal government's rights in the case of the DOMA challenge. And so, you are starting to see a lot of conservatives say, this isn't just a progressive idea. This is a very conservative idea about the way the law should work.
That's why I wanted to talk about the amicus briefs. And, of course, President Obama just filed one, Thursday. And a number of groups and people have, but the one that's kind of most shocking to me is one filed by over 75 signatures of prominent Republicans, two who have current congressional seats.
And actually, by the time it got filed, I think the number was up close to 100. They had some more signatories. Mm-hmm.
And it included Clint Eastwood.
But it did.
I don't know about the chair, but
the chair didn't sign, but the owner of the chair did. So.
Maybe he'll go into a chairage.
It was interesting. There were, in the Proposition 8 case, there were almost 50 amicus briefs that were filed on the side of striking down Proposition 8.
How many?
And I didn't count on the other side, but most of those were religious organizations and some very conservative nonprofits like the National Organization for Marriage and
Liberty
Family
Council,
Research
Liberty
Council.
Council, some of those. But
did any of them have any kind of arguments that were legal arguments?
Most of their arguments are about tradition, about how the institution of marriage is not one that can be changed by ignoring gender. It's arguments that we hear over and over. But the thing that's going to be problematic for them in the Prop 8 case is there was a robust record of witnesses who talked about the history of marriage and the harms it inflicts on people not to be able to get married, the harm it inflicts on children not to have the protections and stability of marriage. And so their ideology is not supported by the actual facts that were presented to the court, and that's going to be a problem for that position.
Well, some of their facts came from the Internet. In the Prop 8 case.
Right. In the Prop 8 case, and what Patty's talking about, there were two witnesses who were supporting Prop 8. They couldn't even find additional witnesses. And the one question that I think absolutely floored the judge and allowed him to write such a strong
opinion
on our side was that in questioning this guy, I guess it was Ted Olson who said, well, where did you get this information? And he said, I read it on the Internet. And this is supposed to be the national authority on opposite-sex marriage and why we have to have it. It's like he even asked him again, no, where did you get this? From the Internet.
Internet.
And I think of that insurance commercial.
Yes, I know.
Where they talk about, I read it on the Internet.
Yeah, you can't lie if it's on the Internet. I say that all the time. I change my birth date, and anybody who argues with me that I'm not 39, I always say, you can't lie on the Internet.
Well, you know, one of the witnesses who's has a history of testifying for the people who are trying to keep gay people from getting married is a guy named David Blankenhorn, and he actually has changed his position about gay people, and so it's like,
right, and he was the other one who testified.
That's right.
So they're the two people.
Even he has recanted his testimony.
I wonder if he's going to do an amicus brief to express that.
I don't know. It's too late now. They're all filed.
Now, I'm curious. Can anybody file an amicus brief?
Yes, they can.
Because Ellen filed one.
She didn't actually. She put it on. She put it on her.
Spread on the internet.
Put it on the internet.
Put it on the internet. That must be true. So that's the Proposition 8 case. We probably should talk for a minute about the defense of marriage case. So the issue there is very specific to, is it okay for California to take away the rights of gay people to get married once the California Supreme Court had said that's a constitutional right that they should have.
And what are the possibilities with the ruling? I mean, the possibility is the Supreme Court could say, okay, now everybody can get married anywhere. That's not really what anybody's expecting. Well, what really do we expect from this?
Once the court takes up the question, they can do pretty much anything they want. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of important questions in both of these cases that we hope the court will address, and that is, how do you judge a law that depends upon classifying people based on their sexual orientation? And right now there's a split on circuits around the country and how they view that. The vast majority say there's nothing inherently suspicious about making classifications based on someone's sexual orientation. If you don't like the law, then you have the burden of showing that there's no legitimate reason that the government has for doing it, and the burden's on you. The other option, which is the minority view that was passed in the Second Circuit in New York on the DOMA case, is that no, sexual orientation is really no different than sex and race. It's a trait that people have that's a part of their identity, and it's inherently suspicious when the government uses that as a basis for classifying people under the law, and that it should be presumptively unconstitutional for the government to do that, and the government has the burden of showing a persuasive reason, legitimate reason for classifying people that way.
And because God said so isn't a really good reason.
Well, it hasn't been up to now, but... But
Von Ciel is not on the Supreme Court, fortunately. So.
Well, right. It is going to be interesting, because that's a question that's been open for a long time. And and of course, we have argued in cases before that sexual orientation really isn't any different than sex or race, in that it's part of your identity. It really doesn't have anything to do with whether you can contribute to society. There are perfectly functional people who are gay, just like there are people who are straight. And so there is the question of who has the burden to justify the law. And that really is what kind of helped the Obama administration and the Department of Justice come around. When they were in states that used the lower standard and said, well, any reason that you have the burden if you're challenging the law, and any reason the government can come up with, as long as it's rational, will accept it without looking behind it. And the Department of Justice had taken the position that, well, that's a pretty easy standard to pass, and so we think that DOMA probably can pass it. But then when they got to the Second Circuit, and the Second Circuit didn't have a standard, they said, well, our position really is that it should be a higher standard. The government should bear the burden. And once they took that position, that's when they really had started to file some helpful briefs. And so that's a big question that could be answered in one or both of those cases. The Prop 8 case does deal with what's the right way to view a law, what's the standard that applies, and so does the Defense of Marriage Act case. So that's a question that could come out that could have application beyond marriage. It could have application in employment discrimination. It could have application in public accommodations. It really is something that could be very significant for a long time and in many, many different areas.
So would they have to, like get a majority in the standing side and also get a majority in the ruling about the 14th Amendment and the equality in order for it to be pervasively applicable across the country?
Well, if the court decides there's no standing, if five people decide there's no standing, then the case will be dismissed. Now, what that means will depend on which case we're talking about. In the case of California, if there's no standing, then there probably wasn't standing to appeal it, and it'll go back to the trial level, and that decision will stand, because the state was a party at the trial level. Even though they didn't defend the matter, they were a party. They were not a party to the appeal. So
then the Walker decision stands in California, and same-sex marriage resumes.
Right, and there's some wrinkles about how that'll get implemented, because there was some question about who, if all the right people were sued, they only sued a couple of clerks, and so there's an issue about, well, what about the other clerks if they don't want to, and you know, the reality is that that's not going to be an issue.
I mean, and hasn't every other state worked that out somehow?
And the fact that the Attorney General and the Governor were named, they have overall authority over the employees. So I don't think that'll be an issue. But the answer to your question is yes. In that situation, California will probably get married again. There'll probably be no rule that comes out of it that's helpful. We won't know if they dismiss it on standing. They'll never get to who has the burden, and
right.
They'll never get to any of the issues about marriage from an equal protection standpoint. And it'll just be a trial level decision.
But will they take it out of the Constitution?
What do you mean?
I mean, if the Prop 8 ruling stands, if the Vaughn ruling stands,
well, then Prop 8 is struck down. It's kind of like, do you have to take the sodomy laws out of the statutes in Texas? They haven't. It's still there.
So it would reside in the Constitution,
but
and underneath it would say it's unconstitutional.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Not just the 2106.
It's amazing how many legislatures.
Well, just like the 21st Amendment, 21st Prohibition, it's there, but with... And it's still there, just with lines through it. Yeah.
It is. The bottom line is it can't be enforced.
Right.
So that'll be a good decision. But it won't really tell us much about other states that have an interest in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So it will strictly be limited to California. That would be the most limited ruling that would be successful. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a ruling that upholds Proposition 8 would be limited to Proposition 8, but wouldn't be helpful. So.
But this would greatly impact your bet.
It would.
You know, because if action happens and we had a ruling from the Supreme Court like that in June, let's say, you could beat out Illinois and Rhode Island, and you both lose.
We might both lose.
That's true.
So,
we might both lose.
Keep that in mind.
We'll have to take each other out to dinner then. Okay, so let's talk a little
10.
Bit about the Edie Windsor case. That has to do with the Defense of Marriage Act. Edie Windsor had been with her partner for 50 years. They had a house and other things.
She's like 89.
Her partner died. She owed $300,000+ in inheritance tax that, had they been married, and that marriage was recognized by the federal government, they would not. She would not have owed the money.
If the federal government had recognized the marriage, then they would not have had to pay that tax.
And they were married in the state of New York?
No, they were actually married. They were actually married in Canada, but New York recognizes marriages even before there was a ruling. Mm-hmm. Even before. The marriage passed the legislature in New York that they would recognize
marriages
from other places.
Right. They were, in fact, legally married all this time.
They were.
Okay.
They were. Well, since they got married in Canada. So
right.
Not the whole time they were together.
Right.
So this is a case Republicans absolutely drives them crazy, the so-called death tax. They hate that tax, except when it comes to Edie Windsor.
It'll be interesting to see. I think maybe the conservative judges, some of the conservative judges on the Supreme Court, will even hate this death tax. And
which is why this was the perfect case.
It really is a great case. Well, there were several up there. They could have picked. There were two cases out of Massachusetts. The Gill case, which was filed by gay and lesbian advocates and defenders, and that actually is the oldest of the DOMA challenges. It's been working its way through the First Circuit for a long time. There's another case that was filed by the state of Massachusetts against the government, also went on a parallel
track. Saying it's costing us money.
Well, and the fact that it forced the state of Massachusetts to discriminate against its own citizens, because there were certain... there were certain funds that they received from the federal government that required it not to recognize certain marriages. Like the one that sticks in my mind was a spouse of a veteran being able to be married in a veteran cemetery. Mm-hmm. Because they had federal money to maintain it. They had to not let anybody be buried there that wasn't recognized by the federal government as a spouse. And so there was this issue about being forced as the state to deny a veteran's benefit to the spouse of someone married in the state. And so things like that. I mean, the states have a really strong interest that's uniquely different from the individual.
Well, and the argument of somebody who passed away, the spouse can't receive the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security benefits, so it's costing the state money when that person doesn't have the money.
The Lambda Legal case that's sitting up there challenging the Defense of Marriage Act is the Galinsky case out of California. This is a woman who worked for years for the Ninth Circuit Court and couldn't get her spouse, her legally married spouse, couldn't get them enrolled for health insurance. And the court actually, when she won her challenge, it was an administrative challenge because they have a kind of an arbitration-like process that avoids the courts. When she won that and the judge ordered her to be enrolled, her partner to be enrolled on benefits, the Obama administration denied it, wouldn't enroll her. Even upon order of the court, they wouldn't enroll her. And so it ended up getting refiled in court and worked its way up to the Ninth Circuit. And then
was she married in that window of 18,000?
She was married, yep. Yes. And so she it went back up the Ninth Circuit, and it was actually in the Ninth Circuit. It hadn't been argued yet when the Gill case and all these others were up there. And so there were petitions filed on all these cases, so the court would have them all up there to take its pick, and it picked the Edie Windsor case, which makes a lot of sense for a couple of reasons. One is the Edie Windsor case was the one where the Second Circuit came down and said it's the government's burden to justify the law, which none of the other courts had done. So it presented that question in a way that could be answered.
Now, what's up for a question? The entire DOMA law or just a section of it?
Just Section 3, which has to do with what the federal government will recognize for the purpose of federal benefits. There's another part of it, Section 2, that says that states don't have to recognize other states' marriages. That's not before the court. That's not part of this.
We're talking to Ken Upton. He's a senior staff attorney with Lambda Legal based here in Dallas. You're listening to Lambda Week. WAMDA Weekly? You're listening to WAMDA Weekly, and we'll be back with more right after this.
My grandfather, he loved the book. His father, he loved the book. I never loved the book.
Big Bill Morganfield is coming back.
That's the son of the blues legend, Muddy Waters, coming to Dallas for one night only in a big K&O and Blues benefit event, Saturday, March 9th at Fort David's Pub.
Big Bill will be playing his father's guitars during this rare Dallas appearance.
Get there early. We'll have free barbecue from the Alligator Cafe.
Joining Big Bill will be the Super Kings and Susie Q and the Shaft, featuring James Hinkle.
Join us for this very special blues event.
Tickets are available now at knon.org, Bill's Records, and Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie.
Saturday, March the 9th, Big Bill Morganfield with the Super Kings and Susie Q and the Shaft, featuring James Hinkle, and a free barbecue dinner from the Alligator Cafe at Poor David's Pub.
Poor David's Pub is located at 1313 South Lamar in Dallas.
We'll see you there.
This is a KNON benefit event. Jim Hightower has moved to be a part of KNON's Speak Up Saturday. Jim Hightower segments can now be heard at the start of each of KNON's Great Talk programming, starting at 7 a.m. with Reverend Marion Barnett's show, Church Information and Open Forum, with the news and talk of South Dallas. Then at 9, the CWA presents Workers Beat with the news and talk of the unions, hosted by Gene Lance and Bonnie Mathias. At 10, the Dallas Observer presents Get Off My Lawn with Jim Schutz, bringing you the other side of Dallas news. Finishing up Speak Up Saturdays at 11 is Lambda Weekly with the news and talk of the LGBTQ community, hosted by David Taffet, Patty Fink, and Lauren Landis. Now starting at each of these shows is Jim Hightower's insightful segment at 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 a.m. each and every Saturday morning right here on the Voice of the People, KNON 89.3 FM.
Hi, this is Candy Markham, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Listen.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Lauren Landis. Our guest is senior staff attorney from Lambda Legal, Ken Upton.
Bravo.
Thank you.
I just wanted to note that I cannot believe we're sitting here. How many years have we done this show together? I just rail and rail about David goes on and on about taxes in New York. And here, the landmark case for us is going to be taxes
in
New York.
I've been saying since the beginning that as boring as it is, the case that's going to win this for us, because everybody gets it, it's just numbers, is a tax case.
You have been saying, and you've been using New York, yes. New York as an example.
And I've been using New York as an example because New York's taxes are so complicated. I mean, especially if you're in the city where you have city income tax dating.
The taxes are too damn complicated.
They are. But that's what I've been saying all along, and...
Yeah,
obviously,
it comes back to get
obviously,
us,
I'm right.
Well, and it certainly doesn't hurt that Edie Windsor is a sympathetic figure. If you've ever listened to her speak, you just can't help but fall in love with her.
She's gorgeous at her age. Pushing
well, yeah, that everything here makes this the perfect case.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe.
Well,
there's a standing issue.
That's true. That's true. Believe it or not.
So this is an interesting case because, as you know, the Department of Justice stopped defending the Defense of Marriage Act, mm-hmm. And at least the part of it that's at issue here. And so John Boehner and his group of people in the House decided they would take up the cause at taxpayer dollar, and a group called the Bipartisan Legal Advisory Group, which is a committee that was created to, we call it BLAG because it seems so appropriate when you say it. It just sounds like them. But it's a group of two Democrats and three Republican House members who advise the Speaker of the House on legal issues, and they've decided they have the right, not the entire Congress, not even the entire House, but this committee has decided they're going to step in and defend DOMA. It is really, really questionable that they have any interest at all that's legally warranting being involved in it. They're not, I mean, it's not even a situation where one house of Congress, let alone Congress, is trying to defend. It's just this group. And so, although they are spending your dollars to do it, and I think the last I looked, they were over $1 million in trying to defend DOMA. So the Supreme Court is asked to look at the question of whether they even have the right to file an appeal.
So what happens if they don't?
Yeah.
Well, if they don't, there's still the question of whether the Department of Justice has the right, because they would normally be the party to defend the law. The problem is that they agreed with the ruling. They thought that the court's decision was correct. And so there's an issue about what both sides agree. Do you really have an actual controversy between the parties? Now, Edie Windsor would say yes, because she still doesn't have her $300,000+ back. So I think that you could argue that there's still an injury to her. Mm-hmm. And certainly the Department of Justice, there's some law that warrants them at least being involved in the first stage of the appeal. Whether they have a right then to take it to the Supreme Court may be an issue. So
there's no
Second
Circuit ruling to fall back to?
There is a Second Circuit ruling to fall back to, if that one also
is
proper. So, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in that one. I think that it would be nice for the court to say that BLAG doesn't belong there, because that would just, like, kind of be just dessert.
I think that would be good for long term, because we don't want little groups from Congress, every time a law is challenged, to say, oh, well, but that was my bill, I'm going to challenge this, give me a couple of $1 million to defend this. We don't want that going
that
on.
That certainly is the case. We've had this arise on the state level in many of the cases, not just marriage cases, but other cases, too, where legislators behind a law that we're challenging have decided they want to get involved in the case. And that's not, most courts will say no, that you don't have an individual right just because you sponsored the law or voted for the law to be involved in a case challenging the law. There is a structure of government that determines whose job it is to defend laws. And so it'll be an interesting issue. Depending on how that's resolved, then you get to the merits. And I think this is the case that irrespective of how the court rules, whether the government has the burden to justify the law or the people challenging it, Edie Windsor here, has the burden of challenging the law, irrespective of how they resolve that, I think most people think this law is doomed. It's going to bite the dust by the end of June.
But now, I was at a DART meeting this week, and his DART representative put a motion on the table to table any discussion of DP benefits because the Supreme Court might mandate it, basically. What this was, it was a tactic to say, let's just not talk about gay people for another 6 months. So his DART representative got voted down 7-6 because it was mostly Dallas that defend let's go on, and they have more questions, so they're just continuing the discussion. Anyway, the thinking there was as if this case is either going to say DOMA is legal and no gay people have a right to marry, or DOMA is illegal and so therefore everybody across the country has a right to marry. That's not the question here, is it?
Well, no, it's not. First of all, DOMA doesn't say whether you get married or not. That's not an issue in DOMA. DOMA says if you're married and you're a same-sex couple, the government's not going to recognize it. So that's not... That's not the same as saying...
You're legal strangers in the federal government.
The federal government doesn't recognize your marriage. The other thing to keep in mind is this has nothing to do with domestic partners, civil unions, anything. It's only about marriage. So if you're in a state where you have a civil union or a domestic partnership from the state, the federal government already doesn't recognize that.
Right.
That's a completely different creature.
So it has nothing to do with
domestic partner benefits in a state where you can't get married. And it has nothing to do really with mandating what states have to do or private employers have to do. It has to do with what the federal government recognizes. Now, if there's a federal law that requires you to do something for a spouse, a legal spouse, then yes. I mean, but it could affect a private employer. But it does not affect what states have to do in terms of that. And the other thing to keep in mind is that it's... Even if DOMA is struck down, there's still going to be questions. So what about federal benefits for someone who's legally married but not in the state where they reside? That's a question we'll have to look at. So, I think a lot of people believe that once we get rid of DOMA, all of our problems will be alleviated, and that's not the case. But it is going to go a long way for people who are legally married to put them on a better footing in terms of access to benefits and stuff.
I know the Supreme Court justices can rule however they want, and they do. What do you think about the momentum that we have right now? You know, what happened just in this previous election, and now, you know what, almost a handful of states are taking it upon themselves to at least consider passing marriage equality. Did the courts look at what's kind of going on in the nationwide when they're trying to come to their decisions?
I think there's two answers to that. One is, as a general rule, the court ignores politics and rules on the law. That's what it's supposed to do. But the truth is, the court is aware of where society is and never gets too far ahead. You remember in Bowers versus Hardwick, when that decision came down upholding criminal sodomy laws, about half the states had them. By the time Lawrence got up over a decade later, only 13 states were left. And so what we know about the court is two things. It never gets too far ahead of society, and it always rules in the narrowest way possible when it can. It focuses just on the question it has to answer and doesn't try to answer broad questions that aren't before it. And so that's why people who watch the court say it's very unlikely they're going to say all the states have to give you marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But they could rule in the Prop 8 case in a way that's helpful to some of the states that are kind of on the fence. They could say, well, we're not going to say you have an absolute right to get married under the Equal Protection Clause here, because that's not presented. But clearly a state like California, who already gives you all the benefits of marriage under domestic partnership, they just won't let you have the name, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what's the justification for giving them a separate second-class status? And if the court were to rule that way in the California case, that would have application in states that have similar structures, where you have civil unions or domestic partnerships that give you all the rights of marriage, but you can't use the name because that's reserved for the privileged class.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of a Brown versus Board of Education type argument. And so it's possible you could get an intermediate-style ruling, one that's not just California, it's helpful in other states, but it's not going to give you Texas or Mississippi or Alabama, although I'm sure those states are close behind. We'll have them soon.
Yeah, I think so, too. See, that's what I'm thinking. It's going to be Rhode Island, then, or it's going to be Illinois, Rhode Island, and then Mississippi.
Yeah, okay.
And legalizing.
Right. He says they just ratified the 13th Amendment.
The 13th Amendment, yes, they did.
Just a week or two ago.
Well, it hadn't been ratified.
Well, you know, we've talked about the conservative point of view and how they're coming around with this amicus brief that has the 75 or 100 whatever names from prominent Republicans. And we, of course, know our side, the progressive side, that it's a matter of equality. But I think the fundamentalist, right-wing fundamentalist position ought to be that everyone should be able to get married. You know, gay people, straight people, and then those people who do not marry are shacking up, and we can go after the people who shack up. Because you remember that in the 60s?
Right.
We were shacking up. That was a big sin.
And
you
when
know?
You say shacking up, are you including the Pope and Gorgeous George as they go off to their summer retreat?
Well, that's a whole different thing.
Shacking up, too.
Well, you know, it does. It is interesting. We have used up most of our time, but it is interesting to talk about the momentum that's going on that doesn't involve the Supreme Court. I mean, you've talked about Rhode Island and Illinois. Delaware, Minnesota is going to introduce, we don't know where that'll go, but it's, right. They're going to introduce a bill, it may have already been introduced in one house. Hawaii has legislation pending. New Jersey
still. Hawaii would have to repeal a constitutional amendment as
no.
well.
No, because that is the only constitutional amendment. It was the first one. And it's the only one that doesn't restrict marriage, it gives the legislature the authority. And so it was a one of a kind type thing. Well, Alaska may have a similar one, but because it was right behind Hawaii. But back then, when those were passed, no one was quite as you know. Now we've got these overwhelmingly ironclad, terrible,
blatantly bigoted,
super domas.
But you know, so we've got, you know, something that could happen soon in there's marriage litigation pending in Nevada. Mm-hmm. There's marriage litigation in Illinois that's on the same track. And
I think Nevada's an obvious one. The marriage industry in Nevada is such a big business. For business reasons,
and rainbow neon lights with the point with a big arrow pointing to the drive-through lane.
You
know,
right.
To get that marriage.
No, but it is such a big business in Las Vegas. Why is it even a discussion there?
You know,
conservative state.
It is a conservative state.
Outside of the big cities.
It is. Yeah. Oregon is another state you might see some movement in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially with Oregon being
between Washington and California.
Well, a lot of pressure
and
there.
That's something that I'm thinking. Pressure. The pressure on Rhode Island, 40-some-odd couples have taken advantage of their civil unions in Rhode Island. Everybody hates the civil union law there because you can drive 20 miles from anywhere in Rhode Island and be someplace where you can get married. So it's wedged in, and they need to. You know, they're talking about it creeping down. Well, here you have Maryland, and then you have New York, and you know that leaves New Jersey and Pennsylvania,
and Connecticut, and Massachusetts. I mean,
But I'm saying the same thing with Oregon. It's just wedged in there between Washington and California. Do they want to be known as, well, we're the conservative state that we don't let gay couples? You know, we don't want them.
Well, and you have New Mexico, mm-hmm. even though they haven't had any luck getting either civil unions or marriage through the legislature, the attorney general has said that the law in New Mexico is that we'll recognize other marriages even though we won't marry you. And there actually are a handful of couples, 60-something couples, that got married in Santa Fe before the Supreme Court shut it down. And mm-hmm. those marriages still exist. No one's ever challenged them.
Really?
So, there are a number of couples that have marriage licenses. Mm-hmm. You know, who knows?
Well, and it's been introduced into their legislature. At least they're talking about it.
Well, and I think that's extraordinary, too, in Texas, because we have some momentum like we've not had before. Maybe it's just a buzz, not really momentum, about, you know, taking 2106 off the books, about repealing the marriage amendment. We have lots of that.
Okay, here's the 2106 trivia. What's the state that still has a sodomy law on the books that has the harshest penalty attached to it? Massachusetts. Massachusetts still has their sodomy bill on the or their sodomy law on the books, and the penalty in Texas, which is a $500 fine, in Massachusetts, 20 years in prison.
Wow.
Wow.
So you can go to Massachusetts, get married, and then be thrown in jail for 20 years.
Yeah, but it's unconstitutional.
It's unconstitutional, and was actually declared unconstitutional before Lawrence. They've just never taken it off the books because they're such a conservative state that they can't get that through their legislature.
It was an oversight.
One other quickie we were talking about just before the show. We have like 1 minute to go. Scalia made some real stupid comments.
Like voting.
Sotomayor was on the bench, and she was just talking. You could see she was seething.
And Kagan, too. And Kagan came back at her.
But, you know, you could see they were like, they were just talking, and you could see it was like, you idiot, Scalia. But what's your take on him?
Well, I think everyone agrees he likes to be provocative and say things for effect.
He basically said voting is a racial entitlement.
But he also said in his stinging dissent in Lawrence that now that after Lawrence, there's no reason why gay couples can't get married.
He did say that.
Yep.
And
yep.
So I think we should hold him to that.
I think we should.
Great.
Ken, these decisions are scheduled to come. Not scheduled, but probably will come down when
the court's last day. I believe the last day this term is the 26th of June. It's the end of June, and so we'll get a decision probably toward the end of June because
if
there's not
the
much time
end.
Left. They'll be argued the end of March, and so we can expect a decision anytime between
now
and
June. We'd love you to come back then and
talk
to us about what the decisions, whatever they are, what they actually mean. Because I have a feeling they're going to be more than just dumb is gone. It's not going to be just, it's not at all that simple.
I'm excited to hear the questions, whatever questions the justices ask during the oral arguments on the 26th and 27th.
It'll be interesting to hear. Ken, thank you so much for being with us, as always.
Thanks.
Great
come
guest.
Back.
Come back.
For sure.
And we'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly.